Other members of the council are not employees of the department. We have ensured that by amending section 6(1), paragraph C, of the Principal Act, amended by clause 4 of our bill. Clause 4 of our bill amend section 6 of the Principal Act by substitution of subsection 1, paragraph C. The new amendment excluded the chairperson from the disqualification contemplated in section 1C, which the disqualification was no person, no officer or employee shall be appointed as a member of the council. Then in our amendment, the new amendment specifically clearly specified that the disqualification refers to members of the council contemplated in section 4B and C. And if we look at section 4B and C, it refers to vice chairperson and other three members of the council. So it means an employee shall not be appointed as the vice chairperson or a member of the council as contemplated in section 4B and C of the Principal Act. When one reads section 4B and C, it makes reference to vice chairperson and not more than three members of the council. The amendment has by reference excluded reference to section 4A, which 4A refers to the chairperson. And we have continued to amend section 1C by deleting the word officer and remain with the word employee as it was amended in the Public Service Act, latest amendment, Proclamation 103 of 1994. Then that ensures that the members of the council contemplated in section 4B, which is the vice chairperson, and the three other members wouldn't come from the employees of the department as disqualified by section 6. The wording is already in the bill. This was just clarifying. It's in clause 4 of the bill. It says section 6 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph 3 of the following paragraph. Then when one takes the reading from 6, it says, no person shall be appointed as a member of the council if you go back to your clause 4, if he is in the case of a member contemplated in section 4B or C, an employee as defined in section 1 of the Public Service Act 1994, Proclamation number 103 of 1994.
Okay, so that's handled. Okay. Now, okay, so that's what you've done now is you separate and then let's go to the. I think that's okay. I mean, I'm sure you've done all the cross checking. We're just sharing. In fact, that map is already cut. Okay, so it's a slightly more complicated new wording is required with the chairperson. Remember, we have clearly the chairperson from this requirement.
Yeah.
And we were from this provision.
Yeah.
And we were suggesting that not only should the chairperson exclude this, we would like to see it done in a more proactive, in a more positive way. And perhaps you've not worked on that further.
No.
Okay. So you're kind of technically making it possible rather than making the intention of the amendment. Yeah. And maybe it's difficult to do that because in an amendment you're dealing with amendment rather than fresh piece of legislation. But what we were asked to think of, we just felt it was a backhanded way of right here, negative, excluding the chairperson from the possibility.
Chairperson, after having discussed it with the state law advisors, we find it to be understandable to put it in this way. Yes. Clause 4 of the bill, it says Section 6 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph C of the following paragraph. Then if you take it from the Principal Act 6.1, it says no person shall be appointed as a member of the council if he, then if you go to clause 4, if he is in the case of a member contemplated in section 4B. Now the question would be, who is this person contemplated in section 4B? It is the vice chairperson.
Yes, it's not the chairperson.
No.
Okay, we've got that.
And then or C, 4C, then again the other question will be, who is this person contemplated in 4C? That will be these three other members of the council who are excluded from being appointed as members of the council or employees as defined in section 1 of the Public Service Act, Proclamation 103 of 1994.
Yes, but I want to pick up on that in the sense that if you go to the actual amendment, in fact, you see, they still refer to in 2A and B as the chairperson and a vice chairperson designated as such by the minister, which is an alteration to the the Founding Act, where it just refers to vice and chair and vice. So is there not a contradiction then in terms of that? Into what Adam's trying to depict in 6.1c. So you've got a on the Amendment Act Section 4. You're talking already now about a chairperson designated as such by the minister and a vice chairperson. Or am I reading that incorrectly in A and B of that thing? Both those positions. But I understood from what you were trying to get was to say that the chairperson must be a designated public servant, as what's depicted here. The others must come through a process which, you know, talks about nominations, media, all that stuff. Am I correct? In section 2B. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, the minister is obliged to consult with stakeholders. Okay, so that's the one thing, and we've parked that. Okay, but what we know the department wants to do, and from the ANC side, we're in support of that. We want the majority of the board to be constituted of external stakeholders, as it were, not. But we want there to be a dynamic link between the department and its objectives and so on, and this advisory board. And therefore, we're in support of the notion that the chairperson of the board should come from the department, should be the minister and or his or her delegated representative or whatever. That's what we're trying to achieve. And from a drafting position, what we've been told, that's possible, and we know that's possible if you just exclude the chairperson from the exclusion that all the other members have. They can't be members. We specifically state they can't be members of the public service. Okay. But shouldn't we upfront say what we're trying to say? You see, because that's our job. It's also to make the intentions of the Act, the amendment, clear, and not just to allow the minister to speak through something. And we're not saying that's what the minister is trying to do, but we're just saying that it can look like that. So we're just saying, let's just, in some way or another, even if it's perhaps just in the objectives of the bill or whatever, to say that.
Which refers to it, Chair.
Sorry?
When you talk about the actual amendment of Section 4, where it's got chairperson, designated as such by the minister, who may be a public servant.
Yes. Yes.
And then the other ones, you say,
yeah,
you may not.
We do that in this other amendment. So that's all. It's not something big, but we just think it, you know, makes the intentions of legislation clear. If we can. It's not always easy, but it's something else. Okay. So maybe there are different routes. It could be, as Stuart is suggesting, under Section 2 of the Amendment Act, where you talk about a chairperson, you just then say that this chairperson would be a representative from the department, or what, whatever the wording is, just say it. And then when you come to making clear that others mustn't be, then we've already done it. Let's have care from the...
Thank you, Chair. The other way, when we looked at it, we can deal with it, is to remove it, paragraph 3, under disqualification. Then we deal with it under the constitution of the council, where we will split it and basically say that the chairperson may be appointed from the public service, and then also the other members may not be appointed from the public service. So we can deal with it in another place, because it's difficult under disqualification to not to put it in the negative. So we'll have to move it and deal with it somewhere else.
Not quite really.
As the ANCM, we do, okay, but the opposition party also need to think about that. Do you want, bearing in mind this is an advisory body, the actual regulation of air services, the actual licensing, is a ministerial function, basically, or a departmental function in any case. But this would be just a body that advises the minister before decisions of a licensing kind are taken. And it's therefore desirable to achieve two things in our view. One, for an advisory body not to be flying off in a completely different direction from where the government is trying to go and so on the one hand, but on the other hand, not for it to be excluding of a range of potentially differing views and perspectives. So it's to get that harmony between diversity but also a strategic purpose that the department, I think, and certainly from the NT side, we're agreed. Let's make the chairperson a person from the department, not from the public service, also that's too vague. It's from the department, yeah. But the others shouldn't be from the public service at all. That's what you let us say. But quite how we say it. Okay. So it's the principle of what we're trying to do, and then how to get it across clearly. And it can't be too difficult.
We'll do that, Chair.
Expert lawyers like ourselves. For us, we don't know how to do that. For yourself, between you, I'm sure. There's so much expertise there. I'm sure they can't get it wrong. Okay. I wasn't even going to drop it. Okay. Okay. Very clear. Anything else?
Those were the two main issues, Chair. And this other amendment relate to cleaning up the bill when it refers to gender insensitive ways. Yes.
Chair, lastly, you remember last week we agreed that Adam must take us through to the public comments. What were they? Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. We have consulted the members of the public by publishing the bill in a government gazette. The bill didn't attract much comment, especially probably because it does not deal deeply with operational issues of the industry. That's correct, Chair. The only comment we received was from the Department of Public Service and Administration, reminding us that they have amended their act and removed the word officer and remained with the word employee. And also just to make proper reference to the latest Public Service Act 115 of 1994.
Cheap remarks about the Government Gazette. It's clearly very much an intra-governmental or very narrow stakeholder primarily issue. Okay. Yeah.
I'm just missing some of my documents, but I think last week we saw quite a serious list of people that have been contacted. There was a list, a reasonable list.
That was relating to Railway Safety Regulator. I think you are thinking of railway safety. We do have that list.
In a more dynamic way. Okay.
Do you? A small thing that I picked up on the financial implications. It says none, but in fact, in the founding document, there is remuneration, which is determined by Parliament. So I don't think you need to mislead anyone there. There is going to be some costs associated to the payment and S&T and travelling of this council in accordance with 7 in the original Act, which says that they will be remunerated. So I think it's important just to note that. I mean, you know, it's nothing. It's a small thing, but at the end of the day, there is going to have to be money appropriated, if it isn't already.
Okay, let's just hear an explanation of that.
Chair, the Honourable Member is correct, but we must also take note of the fact that this bill is not bringing any additional financial implication, because already we've got members of the council and the chairpersons which are already paid out of the expenses of the department.
It should say, in accordance with the original bill, they will, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to be nitpicking, but it's just a small thing, because, you know, someone along the line will say, well, there isn't any, but there is.
I mean, again, I'm not sure what the protocols in terms of drafting are, but it's a legit, if another way of saying it is that there are other than the financial requirements of the original principal act, there are no, or something like that. And we'll call that the Farrow Amendment to the amendment. Okay. If that's okay. But you'll come back and tell us whether it's there might be not a good reason for doing it, but okay. Okay. If that's okay then, can we thank our colleagues who've been dealing with this side of things? And let's suggest that we will try to see each other Tuesday next week. Will we get a quorum? Honourable members will all be, and then let's take it through its formal consideration. I think we're poised to do that. If that's next Tuesday, if that's is Wednesday better?
Wednesday is better because I unfortunately have a severe problem.
Tuesdays are often a difficult. Members are more present on a Wednesday for whatever reason than Tuesday, and of course Tuesday is immediately after the June 16th. So I'm not. I'm fearing that. So let's target Wednesday, when we're more likely to have. Everyone will be here on June the 16th. I mean on June the 17th next Tuesday. But in case you're not, let's go for Wednesday. Okay. So let's target Wednesday for formal consideration, and hopefully we can do that within 15 minutes. And then you can also assure us, because there was correspondence from the legal section of Parliament, that there hadn't been a translation available. So that will be good. Okay. Good. Okay. Thanks very much. Okay. Then we can move on to the piece of legislation that is always going to be more difficult. The legal succession. Okay. Be leading us on that. Okay. So, I think we all know Cuban today as the Deputy Director General. Wasn't it acting the last time we saw you?
Yes, Chair.
So, congratulations. Okay. Someone said that the Department of Transport is like Hollywood. Everyone is acting.
In my case, it was like Bollywood.
For Bollywood, okay. Okay. Thank you. And congratulations. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, we're presenting the amendments to the Legal Succession Act to the SAPS services. As you're fully aware, in terms of the cabinet decision in 2004 to consolidate passenger rail into a single rail entity, it was decided that that process be dealt with in two phases. The first phase was addressing the immediate need of the SARTC and Metro Rail, which addresses the urban type services, and that was concluded in May of 2006. The second part of the consolidation process, Chair, was the bringing in of the long distance passenger rail from Transnet into a new passenger rail entity, which would also then include all passenger rail into one entity. The second phase proved to be much more intricate, as the enabling legislation didn't allow for that to take place, and that is the reason why we are now here with an amendment to the Legal Succession Act. The other aspect to this is to also consider the issue of AutoPax, which is also a road-based long-distance passenger entity within Transnet. Chair, as background, I think that you should suffice instead of going through the entire presentation, the background from the entire presentation. But let me just get straight to the issues, Chair, in slide 9. Like I mentioned, the object of the bill is to provide enabling legislation for Shosholoza Mail and AutoPax to be transferred to transport and then placed in the SARCC, which in the Act is referred to as the corporation. And in the Act, we also amend certain definitions, and we also look at provision to allow for long-distance passenger rail and the bus services to be moved over to transport. Further to that, Chair, if I can go to some of the issues, we changed the definition of corporation to passenger rail agency, because that would be the new name for the single rail entity, the passenger rail entity. And that does reflect the new role of the of passenger rail, of SARCC. Sorry. The other issue is also updating the Act, the Act in terms of deleting the definition of local government body and replacing it with municipality. We're also updating the definition of transport authority and aligning it to the NLTTA. Which is the current legislation dealing with road-based passenger transport. Chair, I think the critical issue, besides the name, is then the issue of Clause 3, Section 23, which addresses the objects and powers of the new entity in terms of provision of passenger and road-based long-distance services, but also to give the entity borrowing powers in order to then maintain the entity and not be only dependent on the fiscus. However, in getting those borrowing powers, the approval of the National Treasury is required, so it wouldn't mean that there would be a watchdog in terms of this process. The other aspect, Chair, is to look at clause 4, which deals with the clause 4 deals with the issue of just cleaning up the act as well, because the Association of Regional Services Councils are no longer applicable, and now it has been replaced by SELGA, so we go into that process. And Chair, Clause 5 deals with various issues with regard to the assets. Now, one of the issues is that Shosholoza Mayor and this transaction to SARCC is not, Shosholoza Mayor is not a ring-fenced entity like Metro Rail used to be. You have a situation where assets are shared between Shosholoza Mayor and the freight side. So that would be your per way, your stations, staging yards, and so on. And one of the issues with regard to these assets is that there are certain assets that would be strategic in the continuation of a long-distance passenger rail, which we believe should be within the realms of the new entity. And in the absence of an economic rail regulator, we believe that there needs to be some sort of method in terms of how we address the issue of the assets, particularly the strategic assets for operations. One of the key issues, Chair, is that access to the Transnet freight rail infrastructure comes at a huge cost, and our initial calculations are that it's in the region of about 55% of the cost of Shosholoza Mayor. And so that's the purpose of dealing with the issue of assets in clause 5. Chair, suffice to say that I think that's the crux of the bill. Clause 6 amends Section 31 of the Principal Act. Clause 7 deals with amends the Principal Act by substituting the word company, which is a reference to Transnet, the expression company and corporation, wherever they appear. And thus gives the corporation equal status to the company. Chair, just some background quickly, is that there is a project committee dealing with the negotiations with regard to the transfer of Shosholoza Mail and Autopex to the department, consisting of National Treasury, Department of Transport, Transnet, and DPE. Chair, with that said, that's a brief overview of the Act. Of the bill that is before you. Thank you.
Open it up. I mean, for the moment, we're just getting a bird's eye view, and that's exactly what we want at this point. Let's get Stuart. I recognize you.
No, really it's not semantics, but you know, when we're looking at changing the name of SARCC and into this new entity, the Passenger Rail Agency, it defines in my mind, and I think the public mind, as the rail entity. Now, you're actually incorporating with this, as part of this new act, AutoPax, which although in the objectives is stated that it's going to, the objective of the agency is to run commuter rail services as well as long haul, as they called all bus services. I don't know whether it gives the right thing, and I just wanted to get clarity whether, in fact, that is the right word to specify rail there, as opposed to more of an agency which is actually going to be doing both. That was the first sort of clarity I wanted, so that we can try and fit into it this new functionary of long-distance buses. Then the other one which worries me when Cuban spoke about this movement of assets and all its liabilities that go with it, because as I understand it at the moment, I don't think Shosholoza Rail is coming with anything other than its rolling stock and maybe a few locomotives that would be moved. When you start talking about permways and signals and train stations and service yards, I really believe one has to be very cautious here as to how you actually look at that in terms of a process. And I'd like to know, you know, that clearly this is just purely a movement of the assets in respect of that service, Shosholoza Mail, and nothing more. And that the permways remain the authority as it is at the moment of public enterprises and they maintain it and they look after it, and we act as a concessionaire on that line. I mean, as Metrorail operates now to a certain degree, and I just want to get maybe something there. The other problem that we ran into, if you recall, with Metrorail merging was the fact that in the first year's annual report, the Auditor General hammered them by virtue of the fact that they took over assets which, in fact, you know, 40 years old, it's depreciated, it's worth nothing. But there is some sort of realistic value that you've got to still attach to that. And I don't know who's going to do that evaluation so that these things come into the books with at least a market value, because I know those rolling stock of Schorschelhorst is maybe more than 40 years old, and, you know, in terms of its current depreciation in the books, it's mostly worth minus zero. I don't know. But we've got those liabilities that are going to go with that. But at the end of the day, I think we just need to have some clarity whether the department's done any thinking about that or I'm on a wrong track here. But those are the aspects I just want clarity with them.
Touching on the big issue. Anybody else on Selenium?
Yeah, it's not. I tend to agree on the new name of the agency. That I think it needs reconsideration, given the fact that the buses are coming in as well, and unless otherwise the word rail gets a new definition. Otherwise, if rail is what we currently know, then it may be misleading. And the other issue that I just wanted to check was the amendment of the definition of transport authority in relation to NLTTA, when that is also coming in front of us for amendment. I'm not sure whether then there are not drafts of the amendment to NLTTA, which then we should be checking whether are we not going to be needed to amend the definition after we have done this one. Thank you.
It's really on the same sorts of issues. The first is, I mean, the name's not such a big issue necessarily, but I suppose what members are correctly saying is again, let's be upfront about what the entity that we're dealing with, and I think we're excited about the multimodalism that we're starting to emerge, and it's something that we advised the Rail Commuter Corporation in last year to think about in a much more dynamic way. The notion that buses are privately owned or municipally owned on the one hand and that rail is publicly owned and so on is a very undynamic way of, a silo way of thinking about these things. So, but then related to that, if you look at the objectives on the, at the end, the sort of explanatory memorandum, it forgets about the bus, because I think it was probably written earlier, and the auto-back thing is a little bit of an afterthought, important afterthought, we think, but so we just need to remember that. We forget about the bus thing. So that relates to the name issue, okay? But, okay, but that's the easy end of things. The complicated end of things is the assets and where all of this is going. And to move a little bit away from the legislation, but what the legislation is all about, I think that from the Department of Transport side of things, we need to be careful that we're not being set up for failure. The Minister of Public Enterprise has been quite active on this front. He's written a number of theoretical articles, sort of fraud policy articles, of a personal view, but introducing an interesting debate, distinguishing sharply between state-owned enterprises, which he likes to be located within public enterprises, and then what are called public utilities. And the difference is that the SOEs are profit-making or potentially profit-making, have significant assets, and therefore have the ability to borrow off budget, you know, to borrow on financial markets, global markets, whatever, and relieve the burden on the budget and have a dynamic and a maneuverability.
Now, I suspect that, I won't accuse Divine and Public Enterprises, heaven forbid, of dumping stuff on us. Because I think Divine Transport does want to take responsibility for public transport and for driving a much better integration of public transport and a strategic thoughtfulness about it. But public transport is never going to be the money spinner that freight is. In our recent UK trip, what we learned was that everybody's trying to get into the infrastructure of rail, which was privatized, but both the private operators operating, you know, like Virgin, which operates rail systems as well as the public operators, are all saying the big mistake they made was to allow the rail infrastructure, because that's the money spent. Now, I mean, I'm sure there may well be good reasons why the rail infrastructure, which is by and large a freight infrastructure, I suppose, remains there. But what I'm trying to say is that we need to be quite realistic about the challenges we're getting. Yeah. And it's not going to be an SOE. I mean, the one nice SOE we've got is AXA. Nice from the point of view of profitability and so on. This isn't going to be like that, I don't think, at all. I think we're going to see significant need for ongoing subsidization, which already Rail Commuter Corporation is getting. Not enough of it. And that's probably the long-term vision. So that's just a broad theoretical understanding, okay? Attempt to think about the difference between what we're dealing with. Okay, then we know, so I won't venture into that, but we know that we've got warnings that public enterprise, notwithstanding the fact that they were told and we're hoping that there's a solid cabinet agreement on this, which I'm sure there is. We understand that public enterprises and Transnet behind them very much want to make some observations about what's in front of them here. Have got some problems, particularly where the valuation, as I understand it, of the assets is envisaged here, kind of rather left in the hands of the Minister of Transport. But we'll come to that tomorrow, because they've asked to make an input from public enterprises, and we certainly must afford them that. But so we all need to know that. Okay, so that's going to be a big issue. So I don't know whether we immediately want to dive into that area, which has been raised by Stuart and myself. And then just to reinforce Lemis's point, we just need to make sure that our definition of transport authorities and so on is not just aligned, and transport planning entities is not just aligned with the Act, but with what we hope to do in the next few months by way of the National Land Transport Bill. I'm sure you've got that right, but it's just to get reassurance.
Thank you, Chair. I think we take a point on with regard to the main, and we look at it. I think one of the reasons is that in our discussion for Treasury, there were two options in terms of AutoPay. Whether you should set up a new entity, a new state-owned entity, or should we incorporate it? And they supported the fact that the quicker and cleaner way would be to push it to SARCC at this point in time. With regard to the assets and liabilities, and I know that will be a long debate, but I think the issue we agree with this is the purways and signaling, I don't think would be the ones that we would be targeting as the main issues, because that's where the access agreements would then kick in. However, we do have, subject to the negotiation, and that's a discussion we had with some of the people in Transnet prior to this meeting, is that we need to put that into the negotiating platform. As part of this transaction. I think the other aspect is that there are certain stations and that sort of thing that we believe are already being sold, which may be significant for the future of the long distance passenger rail, is where we have some problems with, and staging yards and so on and so forth.
The clarity there, I mean provisional clarity, which is you're saying that you might want well, generally the Purway and signaling systems and so on would be Transnet. There are cases where Transnet appears to be selling property which actually has to some other party, and it has significance. And therefore, you wouldn't be shy of the possibility of moving into some of that infrastructure. That's in essence what you're saying. And therefore, we mustn't prevent that possibility from being the case. But we presumably want to encourage it from our side of things. That's what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
And I think also in with regard to Autopex, I think the only asset they have, I think, is on depots. And the rolling stock is leased at this point in time, or the majority of it. So we wouldn't want to see the back end of those depots, because we believe bus depots are strategic assets. And in the implementation of public transport plan, but also looking into how we create access in rural areas, we would require those assets to be maintained within the current arrangement. The issue of the valuation, and then I think maybe we will have the discussion with Transnet and DPE in terms of who should do it. But I think the fact of the matter has already been done, and the due diligence has already been done for both the transactions. It's just a matter of now taking it a step forward. I think that basically covers all the issues that were raised in this round, Chair. The NLTTA, we'll need to find a way of how we also, or the Transport Authority, how we find a way of any succession, any other future acts that come in place. It's aligned to that. We'll do that. Thanks.
Yeah, Chair. I just need clarity, because I'm trying to think while also listening to the presentation. One just wants to know what is going to govern the rail lines itself, because we're talking about commuter rail, and we still have the cargo running on the same line. Is there any provision here that will actually inform the relationship on the rail, the usage of the rail, or is it going to be another separate agreement that's going to be clinched somewhere else? I think I just wanted to get clarity. How is that going to happen? Thanks.
That gets the heart of the challenge, okay? Whether it's access or cost and so on. It's how much do we want to put into legislation, and how much do we want to enable legislation but leave to negotiations, market relations between different a company and a corporation and so forth. I think that's going to be the challenge, because and my old friend, the National Ports Authority Amendment Bill, comes to mind. Because we have similar struggles, right? Because we're dealing with big assets. We're dealing with public entities, basically. But that doesn't make things easier, as you might think. It actually often complicates the matter. And I think what we need to guard against here, I mean, just taking a kind of very abstract stab for the moment, we certainly need to make sure that we empower the new entity, particular, and the Department of Transport, to be able to get on with what we wanted to be able to get on with. But at the same time, we don't want to so legislate that we think we're fast-tracking the process, but in the end we're bogging it down in disputes and overcomplicating the matter. And I think that's happened a little bit sometimes in some of these pieces of legislation that we've done. We've tried to empower, but sometimes we've been over-prescriptive, perhaps, and as a result, nothing gets implemented because it's practice, it's disputed, and it's complicated and what. So I think that, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think that is probably the crux of clause 5, I think, 25A, the insertion of 25A. I think in the absence of a real economic regulator, and Cabinet has agreed in 2004 that we need to look at regulatory capacity to manage these sort of assets so that there's fair access and so on, is what it's a process that's happening outside of this process, because I think the issue here is we want to finalize these transactions and that process as it unfolds will then start looking at the issue of how we manage the asset or access to some of the assets through an independent rail economic regulator. So I think that would then address the governing of the rail lines and so on. And for the purpose of the issue that you raised, Chair, is, and I think that's also a critical issue in terms of how much legislation and how much negotiation, and that's a difficult one. Because the easiest way for somebody to insert or assert the negotiating position is to include it in legislation, and we obviously don't want that to bog this bill down. We want the transaction to happen. But also, you know, from a negotiating perspective, you know, the holder of the asset generally has the upper hand, and we don't want that situation in negotiations as well. So the way the Clause 25A is structured is to try and get rid of that sort of situation and negotiate on an equal footing, but also remember that both are state entities, and over and above the issue of commercial operations and so on, we also have a social responsibility, particularly long-distance passenger rail, which generally serves the poorest of the poor and migrant workers in particular.
Unfortunately, I don't have the, for some reason I didn't get it, and my colleague here next to me hasn't got it either. All we've got is the original bill, so we don't see what this thing means in terms of whatever's been explained here in the presentation. But I'm just wondering now, and trying to think of the problems that we had previously with Metrorail, and, you know, we've dealt with physical assets here, but there's also the human aspects of this whole incorporation transfer. And I'm just trying to think now what the big problems were. There was also hassles with transfers of pension funds and things like that. And I'm just wondering whether we've catered for that. I can't, you know, answer without seeing what legislation is coming before us, obviously, but there's that one. And also the aspects of parity, you know, in terms of some of the what they were getting and what we were paying, you know, that type of thing. I think it's a very important thing if we're going to get this thing to work smoothly, and we put in the legislation, but it might not necessarily need to be put it into here. But I'm just trying to preempt some of these initiatives that are taking place and whether they've been dealt with. But thanks, Chair. That's all.
Second question, yeah, which I asked informally before we started, but yeah.
Thank you, Chair. In response to the question from Mr. Farrell, the transaction of social laws of mail is a 197 transfer in terms of the Labor Relations Act, which means it's a going concern. And in going forward, the Metro Rail will then will assume all the liabilities as well, including the pension fund issues. As part of that, and maybe my colleague from the SARCC will just clarify, as part of that process, there is a harmonization period built in within which there's parity between the two entities. But besides that, within the SARCC itself, there's an exercise going on, particularly as regards the issue of scarce skills, in terms of looking at salary parity and so on within the rail sector.
Thanks for that reassurance. Stuart's question, on a quick first couple of reads, I didn't detect in the amendment go any references to these matters. So it's not there. And those are more in the domain of negotiation, guided by other pieces of relevant legislation in terms of going concerns.
there's a structure chair, and it's called Transnet Restructuring Forum, where this negotiation takes, and it includes labor in those negotiations.
So, and hopefully we're neither, we're not compromising that negotiating process, which it needs to be, really, but we need to make sure. Okay, Lemmy?
Thanks, Chair. Because currently SARCC and Socialosa Mail and Autopark, they are currently giving a service. And this merger that we are looking at, one sees the potential that there will be clashes during this particular period of transactions and transfers and the rest. I just wanted to check whether there is no need of providing for transitional arrangement, that the service is retained at an acceptable level. Because, you know, if one entity understands that this particular thing is going to be transferred to the other one, then they tend not to do anything on it anymore. And then the receiving one may also not do it do anything on it until it is fully transferred to them. And then you have a period where there is service levels are not complied. I just wanted to know whether there is no need that some sort of a transitional arrangement clause is put in place, you know, to safeguard the service levels until this thing has been transferred. The second one I'm thinking aloud, Chair, and I don't know whether it may rock some dust up. The possibility that, as I've been sitting, I've been tackling to get the definition of what is long distance. Is it Johannesburg to Durban, or is it across the province of Johannesburg, from the other side of Gauteng province to the other side? Is that called long distance, or is it interprovincial or interdistrict? I've just tackled with that. But now, I took for granted that if it goes across municipalities, and then probably may be regarded as long distance, I'm not sure. Where you've got a municipality or a district municipality that is not capable of providing bus services when it is necessary, is there any possibility that this entity under the whatever the success of Autopex can provide that service, being enabled to provide that particular service? That's what I just wanted to check. Within a district, not on a local, because, I mean, you have got taxes that run local, but where you've got from within a district, the municipality can't get people that are interested in providing that bus service, either because of low economy, whatever. Is there any way that this can be enabled to provide that particular bus service?
Those are all questions which may be underlined. Maybe we should have, from our side, preemptively asked for a little bit of not just a narrow amendment bill focus, but maybe a sense of what's going on. I mean, Lemon says politely that they're currently providing services. It applies, I'm sure, to Shushal or the Mail. The quality of the services is questionable. Autopax probably is a series of depots and then buses that have rented out, basically, out and leased and so on. But it might have been useful just to have got a bit of a bird's eye view, not now maybe, but next time we meet on this thing, or if next time is too soon. Or even next time, which is tomorrow. Maybe just a bit of a bird's eye view of these are the depots that Autopax own, and that's the real asset that we're interested in. Our objective with Autopax is to move in the direction that Lemmy is talking about over the longer term, to provide long distance, whatever that might mean, bus services where the private sector is unable to do so and where there's a real social need, and to jack up and to improve the provision of long-distance rail services and to harmonize current metro rail type services bus services and general public transport. So maybe a little bit of an introduction tomorrow before we get into the details would be useful, just to give us a sense of what's planned. We know that part of the Autobahn thing, really, and the rush around that is actually 2010, and to act as some entity that can receive all of the new buses and coaches that we're planning to purchase, presumably that's an important aspect, and then an entity that can then do something with them beyond 2010. Not necessarily all of them, but many of them. So maybe a bit of a strategic sense and a kind of, not an acid register in a narrow sense of the word, but some sense of what is intended to come across and with what purpose in mind. Yeah. Offensive.
Thank you, Chair. The other thing that I want to check is that whether this, after this has been fully established, is it going to fall under public enterprise? Because if you read the memorandum in page 3, 2.3.3, it talks about that the corporation shall have full capacity to enter into contracts and perform other legal. The corporation is now empowered to borrow money and lend money. Now, the last thing also that I want to check is whether is it going to be a listed company where people can buy shares and so on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think just the response from the issues with regard to transitional arrangements and as well as strategic overview for tomorrow. We will then go back and prepare in that. Yeah. No, but high level. Okay. I think the other issue in terms of whether it falls under DPE or transport, the intention is that it falls under transport, becomes an agency of transport, and it will be a company in terms of a state-owned entity in terms of the PFMA section. The PFMA, so it'll be it wouldn't be a public place.
Some do. Is there a difference between a public utility and an SOE? And so I think as government, we're not, you know, so I'm not blaming any one department or whatever. I don't think we're very clear about any of that, personally. So I think the questions are relevant, but at least the specific answer to it is the intention of the Act, amendment of the succession bill in front of us, is to locate this public transport entity within transport. And it will be a company, but it will be a state-owned enterprise. It will have that feature to it. Yeah? Can we conclude, more or less, unless there's further matters that people want to run? Because I think we've got a basic orientation. You'll help us with a bit more of an orientation, more by way of, as we're saying, what actually is Shortall of the Mass, how many transits do they run broadly, what services are they currently providing, and Autobahn, what is it, and some sense of where we might want to drive all of that. Really just in 3 PowerPoint slides or something, nothing much more. And then we'll get into the complicated detail. We'll probably ask if they're available. I think they will be available to one of public enterprises, maybe to quite early on in the session tomorrow, flag their concerns about what's in front of us. And I'm sure the Department of Transport will be well prepared, therefore, for what's likely to come up, so that we can get a sense of what the tricky issues are. Okay. The more you can sort it out between yourself, the better for us. Puts us in an awkward position, but that's okay. We're not, it just helps if we haven't got different cabinet ministers, apparently, and their departments apparently disagree and so on. So it's fine, it's natural. The big stakes at play here. So can we leave that on that note? Okay. Thanks very much to everyone who's come, including colleagues from Transnet, who are also here. time ago, the SAMHSA one. But can we maybe try to circulate all of that? And we won't deal with them tomorrow so much as maybe we can just note them quickly tomorrow again and then work out a plan of action. Certainly we must get CBRTA in next week or the following week. But we certainly need half an hour with them and hopefully someone from the department, probably someone like Marius or whatever who's dealing. And then maybe the same with SAMHSA, maybe not. Okay, thanks very much. Thank you.